welcome to another weekly episode of the Beer Fridge Podcast, Real Beers, Real Breweries, Real Opinions, sponsored by This Week in Craft.beer. Sign up to the free weekly newsletter, get all the craft beer news from your favourite breweries and that all-important new beers list as well, This Week in Craft.beer. And we're powered by Patreon. Head to patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast. Show your support for the podcast and you can get access to exclusive content. patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast. Welcome to another weekly episode of the Beer Fridge Podcast. My name's Gavin Baxter. I've got my friends with me, Mark Dixon and Callum Muir. Good evening.
Hello, hello.
Good evening, guys. And today we are joined by Mandy from the Love Sober Coaches. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. So slightly bizarre space to find myself in on a beer podcast, but I like it. Brave move of you guys. So I'm really impressed.
So we did a podcast at the first podcast of the year, actually, just having a really honest, open conversation between the four of us. Scott not joining us this evening, he's busy, but between the four of us, just discussing our kind of relationship with alcohol. And it was quite an in-depth and a properly good insight to what our relationship with alcohol was, and we thought it'd be a really good opportunity to get yourself on at the end of Dry January. So the three of us have had different relationships with it and different outcomes. Mark succeeded. I managed 17 days of dryness. Sounds like I've kept the bed dry for 17 days, and Callum didn't bother, which isn't a bad thing. So yes, it seemed like a good opportunity to kind of look back and see how we got on and get some hints and tips from yourself. But first of all, Mandy, tell us a little bit about Love Sober.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, thanks loads for kind of inviting me to have this chat, really, because I think one of the difficulties is that when people are drinking, they're quite protective over their drinking. And so it's quite difficult to have kind of open conversations about it. I mean, I certainly was, you know, it's like, you know, why don't you drink? Like, oh my God, you must be so boring. Like, that's the worst thing you could ever do to yourself. You know, I had a lot of stereotypes about people that didn't drink and a lot of fear, really. So it's quite hard to just sort of have that honest chat. And I think the more we can just be honest about it and chat about it, the better, really. So Love Sober is a podcast for the sober and the sober curious. And sober curiosity kind of came out, I think, as a term maybe sort of 2-3 years ago, just to sort of allow people permission to have a think about whether alcohol was really kind of doing them any good or whether it was serving them. And certainly from my perspective, you know, my drinking kind of ramped up when I had my kids and I was like, you know, trying to juggle a career. I was living in France in another country. So I had this whole kind of narrative about red wine and, you know, very romantic kind of relation. My husband's French. We have a wine cellar. You know, we weren't drinking kind of cheap stuff. Like, it was all about the kind of ritual around it. But it was making me really unhappy. And I was kind of in burnout from work and really struggling, you know, with depression and anxiety, and sort of started having this kind of internal dialogue of like, could it be booze? You know, maybe that's something that is a contributing factor here. And started looking up online about brain health and sort of making that connection between mental health and alcohol. And there, you know, it is a depressant. So it was like, okay. But it was hard. It was really hard to sort of just take that, you know, there wasn't a rock bottom situation. It wasn't like, you know, I was drinking vodka in the morning, but it was just like, you know what? I'm not sure whether this is serving me anymore, or actually whether I want to be that person anymore, because I'd always been kind of in the rave scene, been a real kind of party girl, but then I was a mum of two and I was still drinking in the same way, and I just don't have that off switch to be like, I don't want one, basically. You know, like, it's like, why don't you just have one? It's like, do you not think I fucking tried that? Like, it doesn't work, you know. I want to get drunk. That's my go-to sort of relationship with alcohol. Like, I want to numb out, I want to party, like. And so it was like, well, I can't the kind of moderation thing was such a cage for me because, you go to the doctor and they're like, well, moderate, like count your units. It's like, well, don't you think I've been doing that? And that's where the shame is because it's like, okay, I'm not going to drink on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or I'm going to do dry January. And then you get sort of halfway through and go, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. And I did have a lot of shame. I was waking up at 4 in the morning and saying, right, I'm not going to do it again. And then, you get stressed, you'd have a busy day, and then just be like, okay, right, I'll do it. I'll sort it out tomorrow. Or I've got that wedding, or it's Christmas and stuff like that. So eventually I stopped. It took a long time back and forth. Definitely the best choice for me, and much better in terms of my health and well-being and just feeling good about myself. And so we set up the podcast to kind of have those conversations really for people, especially for women. There's a big kind of mummy wine drinking culture, and it's quite toxic, because it's like, this is how we're coping. And then marketing has jumped on that, and like all this marketing and cards and birthday cards, and you can get romper suits for the kids with like a bottle of wine on. And it's like, A, wine is actually really strong, B, they're sort of sh saying like in big quantities as well. And it's just have those sort of conversations. And then I retrained as a coach, and now I help people that sort of are identifying that they actually kind of want to stop or make a change, and help them to do that. And it's not about deprivation. It's not about like, not doing something that you actually really want to do. It's really like looking at it and then finding other things to replace it, and going, you know what, actually I me waking up on a Saturday not having a hangover, I haven't had one for over 1,400 days or whatever. I've been 3.5 years sober. That's a bigger reward for me than ever having a drink now, but it took work. So it's about like finding what works for the person and what they really want and their values and stuff like that. So
Think that's a good time then to ask. Obviously, start off with you, Mark. You managed to do Dry January. Any points of you that were difficult during that, or have you finished it and thought, you know what, that was really helpful, and actually, I don't necessarily need a drink.
A few things come to mind. The first couple of days, and I remember saying that we recorded the podcast on the 4th or the 5th or something like that of January. And I kind of joked on the podcast saying it's only been 5 days and I'm sort of struggling. And I listened back to the podcast today and I can't actually believe how open I was on the podcast. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but I mean, it was quite alarming listening back to having completed Dry January, and how I was sort of describing my relationship with not beer, but alcohol as a whole. And having completed it was challenging, and it was more challenging for social events like when we do the podcast. We've had some amazing guests on who have provided us with
Sorry, we don't
amazing
help.
beer. And I do have a strong affiliation with beer. We've started making our own and all the rest of it. So I do love the beer. But for me, it was looking back at the month. Yes, it was challenging, but I've kind of grown quite a lot out of it, having kind of listened back to that first episode and then kind of thinking about how I feel about alcohol as a whole right now. It is quite, I don't want to say transformational or anything like that, because obviously I plan on having a beer or two tonight, which will be the first beer for me for the year. But I'm definitely in a much better place in terms of when I want to have a drink or when I feel I need to have a drink, compared to basically, like I said in the last episode, where I was basically having a drink every night because, well, that was the kind of routine of it. Whereas I could have had a drink last night, which was the 1st of February. But like I said before we started recording, I said to myself, well, why am I having a drink on a Monday night? Because what? Because I can, because it's the 1st of February and I've finished Dry January. And I was like, well, I don't need a beer tonight. I don't really want one tonight because I know I'm going to have a few tomorrow. So I'll just wait until the podcast. So I've done an extra day. And yeah, I've got to admit, I've definitely seen a lot of benefits out of it. So yeah.
It's been for myself, I did 11 days straight, and then overall I've done 17 days dry. And it wasn't a case of I've fed up doing dry January, I'm just going to start drinking. I started it because I wanted to prove to myself that I could stop for a bit, which I did do, and I have done. I've drank less than what I would normally do in a regular month, and it's obviously having the podcast is slightly difficult. Especially, like we said, when breweries are sending us really amazing beers, and it feels like we're doing them a disservice not to drink them when we have them on the podcast. I have had these initially when I started Dry January, going, "Oh, I would like a beer," and then it's fine going, "Actually, I don't actually need to have a beer." But it was like you were saying, Mark, it's then finding something to substitute that thought. And for me, it was just doing exercise. If I've got, "I want to have a beer," you don't need a beer. You know what? Let's just go for a run instead. And then I would tire myself out, or I'd feel a lot better after having that run. Go for a shower, chill in front of the sofa, and then that would be my evening. So that was how I kind of cope with it. Calm, you obviously decided not to, purely because you don't want to. It's absolutely fine. Obviously, you've got kids, so you weren't drinking as much as we were anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think the podcast that we had at the start of the year that we're referring to about our sort of relationship with alcohol, I felt maybe slightly more encouraged from a personal perspective, listening to you guys talking about how you were drinking every night and all that kind of stuff. And generally, I'll maybe have a drink at the weekend and I'll drink on a Tuesday when we have the podcast, but any other night of the week, I don't really feel the need to have anything to drink. And I'm in the unique position on the podcast that I'm the only one with a family, so running around after kids and finally getting them to bed at 7:30, quarter to 8 at night, and generally speaking, you're absolutely knackered anyway, so the prospect to sit and having a couple of drinks doesn't really interest me too much most evenings. So I think I'm quite fortunate in that sense. And also what you were talking about, Mandy, about sort of not having that switch to say, I'm happy just having one beer or happy just having one glass of wine. I've always found myself to be quite lucky in that sense that even on a night out, if I'll get to a point, even now, I'll get to a point where it's like, right, okay, you've had enough. And I can stop. And I've always been like that, even through the whole sort of university years and first starting to go out in clubs and all the rest of it. Very, very rarely would I get so drunk that I couldn't, walk or whatever. So I'm quite fortunate in that sense. And I think it's a really interesting perspective to have somebody that is quite openly admitting that, I can't just go and have one or two, or we'll go and have three or four drinks with my friends and then come home and be compos mentis. It's, if you're having a drink, you're going for it. And it's quite a brave move to just say, right, well, no, I'm not going to do it at all anymore. So
Oh, yeah, well, thank you. I mean, it doesn't come, just like that. There was so much shame in the beginning of kind of like recognizing and you I think we live in a culture where we're sort of seeing a lot of on social media, you mirror back what you see. And it was like, so we live in this kind of false narrative that, well, everyone's doing the same thing, so it kind of it's fine. And then, but
Must be
what's not
right,
happening is what we're seeing like afterwards. And I could drink one, but I wasn't satisfied with that,
right,
and I think it's more, I mean, because I think the problem at the moment is we talk so much about units and amounts and all of that is part of it, but the kind of most important question is like, how does it make you feel? Is there shame? Is there like guilt? Is it kind of taking you away from relationships that matter to you? Is it having an impact on your physical or mental health? Because for some people, they do just have one and that's it, but they still feel terrible about it and they have permission to stop too. So it's like we live in such a kind of alcohol centric culture. It's like if you don't drink, if you decide not to drink, you must be an alcoholic. And it's like it's actually not as simple as that. And so like let's ask better questions. It's actually like, how does it make you feel? Like, do you feel shame? Do you wish you, you know, are you going out? Because what I would do is like, I'd, you know, go out and I'd watch people, you know, I was like, watch how much people were drinking, match my drinking to them. You know, I'd make sure, you know, line my stomach because I didn't want to get drunk, you know, because I'm now an adult. So I don't want to do the stuff I was doing when I was 18. So like, make sure I eat loads, you know, match everyone's drink. But then when I get home, I'd be like, oh, brilliant, now I have a glass of wine and now I can drink like I want to, you know, and like none of that is normal, whatever the fuck normal means, you know. So it's like, it, you know, it's like we put so many measures on it, and it's the biggest thing is just like, well, is it working for you?
Yeah.
And do you want to make a change? And that's kind of all the permission you need, really.
Just jumping on that again before you move, I think that I'm going to find this quite interesting, like, see at the end of February, like, where I'm going to get back to what I deem as, like, a social drinking routine, where I'm going to have a drink on a Tuesday with it, when we do a podcast, and maybe a couple of at the weekend. And I'm really intrigued to see, one, how that has an effect on me, like, in between my ears, in terms of how I'm feeling, because I've been journaling the last month, and I've definitely seen an improvement with exercise and all the rest of it. I've lost like 7 kgs in a month, you know, so you're talking about 14, just shy of a stone in weight. And obviously that's more to do with eating better and exercising, but obviously the alcohol is playing a part in that. And I'm really intrigued, just like you're saying, about how it makes me feel. So I'm intrigued how I feel tomorrow, having going to have a beer or two tonight. And yeah, I think that it's such an important kind of message, really, is like, one, like your relationship with it, but two, is it serving you in terms of in a positive way? Because that's something over this month that I've been quite kind of focused in on, sort of these negative I'm calling them negative waves. So it can be people, it can be comments, it can be a lot of different things. And I just keep saying, boys have probably heard me saying it, I'm just not doing it anymore. Anything that doesn't serve me or brings negativity to me, I keep saying I'm getting too old for that shit, basically. Like, and yeah, I think that's just really quite an interesting point that I've literally scribbled that down in my book so that I can, like, over the course of the next few weeks, I can write down maybe how I feel, especially like after having a couple of beers.
So every Wednesday we're going to get sent abuse going, you fuckers with that podcast, your fault.
No, I would never do that. But I think that's quite interesting.
The one thing I wanted to ask you, Mandy, was from the start of the pandemic, have you found more people are looking for advice with regards to alcohol? Because an interesting statistic was released today by the Office of National Statistics. So there was a 16% rise in alcohol-related deaths between January and September 2020 compared to the same length of time in 2019. So that's obviously majority is going to be because of the pandemic, people locked up in their homes and just casually just, as soon as it hits, waiting for that clock to hit 5 o'clock for there to be an excuse to open a beer or a bottle of wine. And you find people are now looking and searching for more advice and help.
Yeah, I mean, it's been twofold, really. Like, I think certainly people that were doing quite well and were sort of at the start of their sort of exploration into sobriety have really struggled with the, you know, the lockdown. So I know, I mean, we have a group for women, a secret kind of group, and I know certainly there's some of those women that had like 2 or 3 months and they were kind of, you know, and then it was like lockdown, homeschooling, all of that sort of stuff, the stress of trying to manage everything has kind of pushed them back into old habits. Because essentially, you know, your brains are amazing and, you know, we have neuropathways and that's how we build habits and things become routine and automatic so we can think about other things, you know, because we do so many things automatically. And that's what happens, what you were saying, you know, before it becomes habitual without you even thinking. Like, I'm sat in front of the TV drinking a beer. Like, how did that even happen? I didn't even make a conscious choice about it. And you know, and so it's working the muscle, you know, to develop new habits. And so that's what you do in kind of early sobriety, is like, right, I'm going to do something different, and I repeat and repeat and repeat, and then eventually that becomes the kind of new normal. But when you're in heightened stress, then obviously your brain kind of goes into sort of fight flight, like, ah, help me, and it will go back to the thing it knows best. So there's that side of it, and on the other side of it, yeah, people that, you know, maybe we were sort of teetering on the edge of more dependence issues have certainly, you know, having more difficult kind of problems at the moment. And the things that people don't talk about enough is the kind of, you know, violence within the home, the impact on kids, you know, kids growing up with alcoholic parents, or people that, or parents that drink too much, and, you know, violence within marriages, stuff like that in lockdown has been, and accidental death. And actually, I did a bit of a study in this because living in France, I read something about kind of the deaths of alcohol every year, and I was like, bloody hell, that's like loads compared to England. Like, how is that possible? You know, like, I grew up in England, like, I know how we drink. Like, how can France be so much worse? And actually, I mean, you know, when you start to get into the politics of it, there's quite a lot of deals between government and our big alcohol in the UK. And so what they do is they only report on like direct deaths from alcohol. So it's only like liver disease, things like that. They don't report on accidental death, you know, so anything that's related, or cancers and stuff like that, which are all related to alcohol as well. Whereas in France, it's everything. So, you know, we've got like, you know, 200,000 or something, and France has got like 4 million, you know, and it's like, hang on a second. So yeah, I mean, accidental deaths, and the thing that's put on, it's like another thing for the healthcare system to sort of deal with, you know. And yeah, it does. I think when you see, it's hard to unsee, and it can be quite upsetting, you know, because you just want people to be well, and like, and it's everywhere, and like people joke about it all the time. And you know, we go on the radio and they're like, ha ha ha, you know, like, have you given up Dry January? And it's like, actually, for someone, that's quite like a big deal, you know. So that's why I was so impressed that you wanted to have this chat, because I was like, wow, like, that's massive. Just to be open, it's like, you drink, I don't, that's cool. Like, you know, I don't shame you, I don't worry about it, but it's like, let's at least be alcohol informed, you know. Because we hear it all the time, people go to their therapists, you know, and it's like, I'm dealing with anxiety, and they're like, well, just have a glass of wine in the evening. And it's like, it ruins your brain to deal with anxiety, you know. So it's like, do whatever you want, but at least have an informed choice about it, you know. It's like with any drug, isn't it? I mean, they're all drugs, right? Like, I took a lot of drugs in my life. I wish I'd, most of them have been cleaner than they were. But it's, yeah, like, have an informed choice. It's like, if I'm going to put this in my body, at least I know what it does to me, and you know, and how it can impact on other people.
Definitely.
Sorry, that was a bit of a rant, wasn't
Oh no, but
it?
I think it's something, as much as we're a beer podcast and we're promoting all these beers and we've got breweries on and stuff and we're waxing lyrical about all the amazing stuff they're doing, we have to look at the other side and have an honest conversation and make sure, like you said, people are informed and they're making the right choices and that we don't put a message out there saying drink beer, drink beer, drink shit tons of beer, because it's not healthy. We need to be honest and at least give the right information to people and make sure people, if they are drinking, they're drinking responsibly and that they've got an outlet that they can, and then they can see that us four guys that drink every week on the podcast are having honest conversations, and it is difficult, but they can also do the same. Sorry, Calum, I cut you short there.
No, it's really interesting to hear all these sort of different perspectives. And I think going back to the family sort of aspect, it really opens your eyes to how young people might perceive what you're doing and all the rest of it. I mean, because we get doing the podcast, we're really, really fortunate to have great relationships with a lot of breweries and producers and stuff, and we're lucky that a lot of these guys are sending us some of their stuff to try so that they can talk about it on the podcast and stuff. So barely a week goes by without beer arriving at the house. And I mean, my son, he's just turned 3 a couple of weeks ago, and he's asked a couple of times, you know, why do you always get beer, daddy? And it's like, wow, you know, why do I always get beer? But I mean, I think what's important is that to have that distinction between, you know, what am I actually drinking this for? What is the purpose of me having this drink? And I think the important part for me is to always have that distinction of I'm drinking this just to see what it tastes like, and I'm interested in the process. I mean, Mark touched on it earlier on. We're now dabbling into making our own beer. So the process of making alcohol, making beer, is fascinating to me, and I'm really enjoying learning different things and all the rest of it. So for me, if I open a can of beer, it's what does this taste like? How has this been made? It's
research.
But the end result, you know, the alcohol content isn't as a byproduct for me. It's not the reason that I've opened the can. It's you know, so I, as long as I can maintain that distinction, I think I'll be okay.
Yeah, and I think times are changing, but certainly like when I was growing up, you know, that I never knew anyone that didn't drink. Like there was no question in my brain that it was like I wasn't going to drink. Like it just wasn't an option, you know, it's just a sort of rite of passage that, I mean, I worked in pubs and clubs. And so it just, you know, and my husband's sister doesn't drink, you know, she's forever teetotal. She just didn't like it when she was younger. And it blew my mind because she was this, you know, chic Parisian woman, really beautiful, read loads of books, super, like, you know, amazing career, we're still going to festivals, you know, and I was just like, well, like, what are you? You know, where did you come from? How could I be you? You know, it was just like really kind of interesting and intriguing. And I think it's all about investigation and just being curious about what you want. And in the same way, you know, having those honest conversations with your kids, like, I don't drink, my husband drinks. So he has to have an honest conversation now with the kids. It's like, well, because I like it, and you know, I'm careful, and I don't drive. And rather than this, just like, it's just what parents do, which was how we used to drink, to be honest, you know, because I didn't want to have that conversation with them. So whatever people want to do, yeah, it's just about being honest about it, I think, really.
Definitely. The one really interesting point that I've found initially kind of before the first podcast at the start of the year, and this podcast was a topic about the grey area of alcohol. And it's an area, after reading about it, it's one that I feel like I lay in somewhere, and at the start of the year, somewhere that I think the three of us lay in, but just, I don't know where, but something that's just really interesting and super fascinating. Tell us about that bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, we used to look at sort of addiction as a black and white model. So as I said before, it's like you're either an alcoholic or you're a normal drinker. And the World Health Organization kind of looked at behaviors and looked at what was really going on for people. And they were like, it's a spectrum, you know, it's a spectrum of addiction. And so you could be, very few people actually have no kind of physical or mental dependence. Like everyone has are some, because it the nature of the drug, and so they sort of devised a new way of looking at it in terms of alcohol use disorder. So, you know, there's people that drink very rarely, so they would say, you know, at a wedding twice a year, they never think about alcohol. Like if it didn't exist anymore, they couldn't care less. And then everyone else is kind of on a spectrum. And so the further down the spectrum you go, the more complicated it is to stop and the more help you need. And actually, like, alcohol is one of the only drugs that you can die from detoxing. So that's why you have to be super, super careful with people that are actually sort of deep down into their addiction. So they talk about hazardous drinking, harmful drinking, and then alcohol dependence. So alcohol dependence is kind of, you know, what we classify as rock bottom. Yeah. So someone would need to go to treatment and have a medical detox. And then, you know, the rest of us basically sit somewhere in that kind of, you know, hazardous or harmful use. So hazardous use, I'm actually referring to my book here because we published a book this year, are people who drink above the recommended limits units on a regular basis but are not yet experiencing harm. And then harmful use is people who drink above the recommended limits and experience harm resulting in effects on their physical, mental health and social consequences, binge drinking, injuries, violence, blackouts, and then obviously you have the kind of deep dependence. Mm-hmm. So the idea is really that changing the conversation to talk about grey area drinking allows people to not only ask better questions for themselves, but also to know that it can fluctuate backwards and forwards. And that's the other kind of myth that, people that are alcoholics will always, they can't go in a bar, otherwise they might, it's like people can, you can recover from having a dependence on alcohol. And so, yeah, it's sort of breaking the stigma really. And when I kind of understood that, I was, because I did, I used to have blackouts, and that's dangerous, for a lot of women have blackouts. I don't think men do as much. I mean, I know my husband's had some in the past, because it's like, please just go to bed, like push him in the room and shut the door. But I certainly had quite a lot, and that's horrendous, it's dangerous, really dangerous. And especially when I was at university, I mean, we would just like be gone, like falling down the streets. And yeah, and so it's kind of like, look, it's not just black and white. And so it allows people to have more kind of conversation about it, I guess.
It kind of it's the beginning of the process of breaking down that stigma, because as soon as you to Matt, as soon as you start talking about you might be worried about how much you're drinking, you're an alcoholic. So recognizing that there's a spectrum there, that everybody's on it, so we're all in the same boat, we're just maybe slightly in a different place. And it's whether or not the place that you are on that spectrum is healthy for you, or not. It's quite interesting, and hopefully that will break down that stigma and allow people to be more able to ask for help.
Yeah, and it's about kind of, the earlier you get help, the easier it is. So it is very much that kind of early, like if you are starting to ask those questions, it's like that's a brilliant time, because you've got loads of agency to be able to change. I know Bryony Gordon, she just wrote a book called Her Glorious Rock Bottom, and she described it as a lift. It's like, going down the lift, and that's quite a nice analogy, kind of, like however far. And so you can get off the lift at any point. And so yeah, it's that agency to change and permission. And it's so interesting when you start, like, addiction is such a kind of, difficult word to talk about. But we talk about workaholism, and we talk about phone addiction, and we talk about cigarettes, and we have very different conversations. But when alcohol comes into it, it's suddenly like, like social pariah, like and there's a real thing about you should be able to beat it. You should be able to drink. It's like it's part of our culture. So, and if you don't, then you're like in a sort of, in an AA meeting, kind of miserable for the rest of your life. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of why we started the podcast. And it's just like, like life, what you realize, I think, when you start hanging out in sober forums and stuff like that, is like quite often they're the people that had the most fun. It's like, it's they're not boring people, they're like the people that just couldn't stop the party. So there's a lot of very, very interesting characters and interesting stories, and I mean, I think the thing for me is also there's a lot of different factors within this, so it's like you might be drinking loads and you could just not give a shit, and that's fine, that's your choice. I mean, I had a very sort of traumatic experience when I was 18, and I put it in a box and I didn't talk about it for 20 years. And so, like, I got diagnosed with complex PTSD in my 30s, and trauma really impacts the brain, and so, and I had depression, so it's like there's some layers there. Do you know what I mean? I'm pretty susceptible to alcohol, and so like I'm more likely to have an issue than someone else. And so what am I supposed to be, ashamed that like something really terrible happened to me, or my brain's a bit fragile and I struggle a little bit, and I'm quite sensitive? Or am I allowed to go, actually, I don't want to put like a toxic substance in my system that's going to make it worse? So yeah, it's just being kinder to ourselves about it, I think, is really key. If it doesn't work for you, that's cool. Like, just stop.
Yeah, definitely. And we've all got different relationships with alcohol. I mean, for me at the moment, my reason for doing Dry January was just to reduce how much I was drinking every month, and then just learn and, like you said, come up with new habits to when I'm having dry days, it's absolutely fine, nothing wrong with it. And just finding ways of when I go, oh, I want a beer. No, just like you said, do exercise or do a run or do stuff for the podcast. It's just finding those coping mechanisms and finding a healthy relationship with alcohol yourself. And mine's is just moderating more and having less than what I was usually doing before. Because like I mentioned in the first one, I was probably having a couple every night. Just like you're saying, automatic reaction is sitting on the sofa and have a couple of beers. And my excuse was initially was it helps me get to sleep, which I know it actually doesn't. And reading the bits that you've put up, Mandy, with cigars to sleep, and I don't want to ruin your whole book and the bits you've mentioned as well, but it's like you don't actually have a proper sleep when you drink. You don't have a proper sleep at all. And it was one of the really fascinating things of learning what happens to your body when you stop drinking. But definitely check the book because I'm sure it's in there. The one thing I did want to ask you, and not to ruin, was is bits and ways and maybe simple things that people can do just to help cope, or things they can use to help through this, either whether being going sober or just try to help moderate their alcohol intake.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it is about our nervous system. So, you know, we're super stressed as a nation, as a people, like we're on like go, go, go all the time. So we've got like, you know, really high levels of cortisol running through our systems. So actually, if you can take short breaks throughout the day, you know, just to either do a grounding exercise where you just literally like, you know, connect with the ground, I'm here, lie on the floor, just something that can allow your sort of body to sort of reset and your nervous system to regulate, then you're not going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing throughout the day. And then you get to the end of the day and you're like, oh, fuck it, I'll have a beer, you know, because, you know, part of it's willpower.
Yeah.
And the difficulty with Dry January is quite a lot of people do just use willpower. So they're like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm batting away. I'm batting away. And then they get to the end and they're like, oh, thank God for that. And then they kind of sort of go back to the behavior before. So, trying to find ways where you can like look after your willpower so you can use that for those early, because it takes a bit of time just to sort of say, I'm not going to do that thing with that wine witch or that beer monster in your ear, like, come on, it's been, you know, not that bad, you know, just have another one. So yeah, look after your nervous system, drink water, make sure you eat regularly. Like quite often they're the biggest triggers, like hungry, angry, lonely, tired. That's normally the thing that trips people up the most, because you're either hungry and you haven't eaten, or you're really thirsty. I mean, I used to drink coffee all day and red wine all night. Like I never drank water. Yeah, reach out, like make connections with people. You know, sober people are, as you can see, quite enthusiastic about their life choice. So if you're interested, you know, you see someone that kind of looks fun or interesting on Instagram, just send them a message and say, hey, like, I'm curious, you know, we'll always be like, okay, cool, you know, what do you like? Okay, there's this group, there's so many groups, like, you know, Club Soda is wicked if you're interested in kind of drinks and stuff like that, because that's really their focus. And, you know, their whole kind of philosophy is, let's all just be able to drink in the pub together. So, you know, if someone's not drinking, let's have something decent for them to drink.
Yeah.
So Club Soda is a brilliant one, probably for your audience. Yeah, you're not alone. So just get in contact with people. They always say that, you know, shame dies when it's shared in safe spaces. And I love that, because it's like when you can say to someone, me too, you know, it just already like that, those cortisol levels are going to be down a lot more. And what else? Podcasts and books, there's so many now, you know, so just get yourself educated. Alcohol Explained is a brilliant book, because it really tells you like the facts about alcohol, and so that's a really good one to read if you dare.
Tell us about your book and where people can grab hold of it.
So the book is called Love Yourself Sober, a self-care guide to alcohol-free living for busy mothers. It is written by mums, so it's targeted at mums, but we kind of, it's for anyone that's in caring roles, really. Roles where they give a lot to other people and they don't really have a lot left over for themselves. So it's really practical, lots of coaching activities, lots of journaling sort of prompts, just to help you ask those questions about, you know, what you want to do about your relationship with alcohol, and and how to make a change. So, you know, part of it is about shame, self-compassion. Like often people's self-esteem is quite low because when you're not meeting your goals around something, then that's kind of chipping away at your self-esteem. So it's that as soon as you start to like turn it the other way and you're like, okay, I can do this. And I've got friends and I've got people around me that are doing the same thing. That sort of holding space really, really helps. And so, yeah, so it's available everywhere, Amazon. Don't buy from Amazon, but you know, if you do, you can always review it on Amazon because that always helps. And it's on Audible as well.
And make sure you head over to the website as well, lovesober.com. You can get sign up to the coaching from the guys as well. Loads of stuff on the website to help you out. Make sure you go to the Instagram pages as well and make sure you like, follow and share everything Love Sober do. And go and check out the podcast. I've listened to a couple of episodes myself, thoroughly enjoyed it.
I mean, we're a bit stupid. Like, I do apologise. Like, no, sometimes we have very serious conversations, but sometimes we're a bit silly. But, you know.
My wife has enjoyed it as well. Sorry, Mark.
I think that's what you need, though. I think bringing the silly to a serious conversation makes it really like personable, and it actually hits home a lot more rather than sort of kind of wagging the finger and saying this is how it should be done. I had one question to ask just while we're obviously on a beer podcast, but have you found like the addition of the alcohol-free range in terms of beer, wine, gin, you know, spirits has helped with people in their, you know, bid to become sober, or, you know, or helping people kind of break down? Because you've mentioned the units quite a few times today in terms of like, and that's something I kind of laugh about a little bit, because, you know, we've had beers where they're, you know, 12, 13% beer and it's a 5 units of alcohol in the one beer. And we also had another podcast where we joked about we had 3 beers from the brewery on the one podcast and it totaled 14 and a half units for the 3 beers, which was over your weekly intake. But anyway, going back to my question there, sorry, total detour, have you kind of found the expansion of the products has helped with what you're
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think people that found themselves kind of in the, you know, deep dependency side of things normally can't drink sort of replacement drinks because they find it triggering. I think, you know, a lot of people within the gray area where it's kind of they've got some agency around stopping or about their sort of drinking has helped a lot. I mean, I think it's, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Janie Lee Grace, who she's a Radio 2 presenter and she also does a sobriety podcast. She said, you know, keep the ritual, change the drink. And that's a really nice way, you know, because it is like a lot of it's about that transition. You know, it's like, I've had a busy day. I don't want to just like have a cup of tea, you know? And so it is just having that. So I normally have like a Heineken 00 or have like, you know, a tomato juice, like really spicy, or I have like a non-alcoholic mojito or something like that, you know, about 7 o'clock, because it just helps that transition and it feels sort of you don't stick out as much. I don't tend to drink them that much, but if I go to a party then I'll arrive with my little like bag of non-alcoholic beers just so I don't, yeah, it kind of lets you blend in a bit. So yeah, and it's been fantastic because like my dad's, you know, in recovery from cancer, so he's a really, really, really big beer drinker. Like he loves sort of real ales and, you know, and craft beers, but it's allowed him just to mix a bit, you know, and that's great as well, just to, so he'll, you know, have one that he really likes and then he'll switch over and have like non-alcoholic beers. And so in that sense as well, and you know, and it's not, I mean, there's, I think it's something like 60% of the world don't drink alcohol, you know, for whatever, you know, religious reason or, you know, just by choice. So that's a lot of people, you know, that don't. So like it's much more inclusive to be able to have spaces where everyone can kind of hang out and not feel like they're excluded because they're not drinking alcohol. So yeah, it's been fantastic and it's growing so much. I mean, it's
that's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, you'd notice within the last few years, it's when there's now an alcohol-free section in the supermarket. You know, it's like the the vegan section or the free from section, you know, people that can't have gluten or anything, that's all growing as well. But now there's an alcohol free section in the supermarket rather than it just being stuck on a shelf somewhere where you might never see it, you know.
Yeah, and that was always my dream, you know, it's just like, let's just make it normal, like a valid choice, like whatever you want to do, like let's just be able to choose rather than just it being automatic. I mean, there's still, you know, like it's quite hard when you go to a party and you still get those awkward questions of like, why don't you drink? Like, what, can't you just have one? Like, you know, I have been, someone said over a dinner table, like, so what, are you an alcoholic? And I was like, just a dinner table chat, you know? And I actually wish now I'd said, yeah, I am, you know, just to see what they said. I don't class myself as an alcoholic. Like my mum, my best friend's mum died of alcoholism. Like I saw what that looked like and I wasn't that bad. And actually, you know, that label kept me stuck in my drinking for a long time because I was like, I'm not that bad, but I'm not happy how I am. So yeah, I mean, I don't associate myself with that label, but I certainly had an addiction to alcohol, you know, as I did to cigarettes and my phone and sugar and, you know, everything else.
So. No, terrible. I think the overall theme is have a look at yourself and kind of decide what your relationship with alcohol is and be happy with that decision. And if you need help, definitely reach out. There's places out there that can help you and definitely have a talk with friends and family. I've thoroughly enjoyed the two chats, the two podcasts we've done about our relationship with alcohol. It's been really insightful and really just interesting just to hear what you guys think as well. And then, like we've had discussions, it's probably more yourself, me and you, Mark, discussion with family members and friends and stuff who have pointed out, have talked about our alcoholic habits, or alcohol habits, I should say, not alcoholic habits. And it's been nice to have a talk about it, and it's been really refreshing. And Mandy, I appreciate you joining us, and definitely go and check out Love Sober, check out the podcast, check out the website as well, lovesober.com. Make sure you go and pick up the book as well. Mandy, anything else you want to promote or anything at all?
No, like just, you know, reach out. I mean, you know, if it's not me, if I'm not the right coach, then I'll find the right place for you. You know, that's part of the work that we do, you know. So it's just like reach out and have a chat. And, you know, if you want to work with a man, I know male coaches, if you want to work with, if you don't care, if you want to do a program, you know, there's so many choices and it can feel really overwhelming. So I'm really happy just to have a chat if someone needs to.
Super awesome. Really appreciate you joining us this evening, Mandy. Beer Fridge Podcast, sponsored by and brought to you by This Week in Craft.beer. You know the... In fact, I'm going to cut that out because that just sounds really bad saying that. Thanks, Mandy, for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
And
little one.
The little ones are in the building. And until next time on the podcast, I appreciate the time and we'll see you next time. Cheerio! Yeah.